This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to episode 75 of the Dreamcast Junkie Dream Pod. My name is Tom and I'm joined by two very, very special presenters on this rather special episode. It's not special because it's episode 75, it's special because this episode is being recorded in April 2020, which is exactly 5 years to the month. We couldn't quite stretch to the day, but to the month, since we launched this very podcast back in April 2015. Where does the time go? Anyway, to celebrate this momentous occasion, I'm joined by two of the original presenters who helped me kick all this off 5 long years ago, Rob Jones and Aaron the Gagaman Foster. Guys, welcome back to the Dream Pod. Who would have thought we would be here 5 years and 75 episodes later?
I'm amazed we got five.
I was going to say, Rob, that's not actually a rhetorical question. I'd like an answer right now, please. Go.
I honestly didn't. To be fair, I didn't think it'd probably run this long. But, you know, there's been such a quality team, you know, over the past 5 years. You know, so many different guys who've got involved and really helped sort of drive it on. And, you know, it's really gone from strength to strength.
Yeah, it's quality that we started with this kind of small microcosm of the three of us, and then it kind of blossomed to all the other people who've been involved: Caleb, Xander, Ross, Gaz, Scott, and all our guests, and the current lineup as well. It's kind of evolved over time, but we were the OG crew, if you will, and I'd like to just take a little bit of time to discuss what you've been up to in the intervening gulf of time, Aaron. What have you been up to? I know you've been quite active on the old YouTube.
What, in the last 5 years or just recently?
Since you were born, to be honest, go for it.
Oh, since I was born. Right, sorry. I was born at home. No, that's all right. We don't need to do that.
Just recently, really, what you've been up to?
So in terms of YouTube-ness, I have a channel called Lucky Hits that I've been plodding along with pretty much as long as this podcast has been going, if not maybe slightly longer. I've mostly been doing live streams on that lately because I find that's a lot easier to do than editing full videos and stuff. So I've been doing a lot of themed live streams. So I've done Dreamcast live streams. I've done Sega Saturn ones, Mega Drive ones, all that kind of stuff. Wii live streams, just trying to do like themed stuff and like focusing on certain consoles. And I've got a few new ideas in the pipeline.
Excellent. Sounds good. So it's all ticking over then quite nicely, yeah?
It's pretty much a casual thing now. I'm not like taking it as seriously as I used to, like a couple of years back when, yeah, I was trying to put out videos every other day and all that kind of stuff. But it's more just as a sort of a hobby now.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to approach it. I know, you know, Caleb, one of our previous hosts, the man with the amazing Jesse Ventura impression, has he's done quite well himself on YouTube. I know he's got a channel that he's dedicated towards like D&D and
Blanco. Yeah, it's been doing exceptionally well. I think he's found a really good niche there.
Yeah, didn't you actually do the logo for his channel?
I did I did some character art, and I think there was a video he did where I did some artwork for as well.
And Rob, what about you? What you been up to?
Oh man, a lot of water has gone under the bridge. A lot of water has gone under the bridge in the past 5 years. My last big project was working with the awesome Sam Dyer over at Bitmap Books on the Metal Slug Ultimate History.
Oh yes.
I mean, I wrote the history for it, and it was just an absolutely fascinating experience. Like, every single one of the main guys, basically, apart from one or two, we got, like, exclusive interviews with, and they dropped so much information about that entire series, but specifically the first game. And for anyone who's a fan of of Neo Geo, Metal Slug, any sort of run and guns, like I can't speak more highly of it, really. So that's the last thing I've been involved with. What else have I been doing? Still doing the same old, doing some writing over at T3.com, where I still head up our tech and gaming coverage, which is quite fun. Yeah. And the only other thing I'll say, I've just started again watching Neon Genesis Evangelion, which
have you been watching the new dub on Netflix? Or
I have been watching the new dub, but I've got old VHS tapes and I have a DVD collection as well, which includes a couple of movies. So I started with the Netflix one, and then I dug those out, and I've been banging them in the VHS player and getting some of that. But anyway, that's getting off topic.
I was going to say, it's quite weird how just in the 5 years that we've been doing this podcast, that it's become apparent to me how kind of interconnected the whole kind of retro gaming community actually is, regardless of which format you are a fan of and what you cover. You mentioned the Metal Slug book there, Rob, from Sam Dyer. The only reason I mention that is because I lent him my Neo Geo CD to put in the book for the Neo Geo collected works thing that he did. And it just kind of came back to me, and I was like, I forgot about that, and you reminded me. And it's just, everybody seems to know each other, and it's really cool. And I bring that up because at the end of this podcast, we will have some messages from people who have, you know, either been guests or know the podcast or have written on the site, just sort of congratulating us on 5 years, really. So it's interesting that you bring that up now before we get to that point.
Yeah, it's always been what I always think. Literally, it's been, I know that, you know, the retro gaming community does get a lot of flack and quite a lot of the time, you know, rightfully so, or certainly in my opinion. But I honestly think, like, at its core, that is one of its main strengths, is that it's really actually just a really cool bunch of guys, and everyone knows each other and everyone collaborates, and it's really creative, and, you know, quality projects such as the Dreamcast Dream Pod come out of that.
Well, yeah, it's true. Yeah, I mean, and even if somebody gets to be a massive kind of YouTube star or something like that, that it only takes a quick message, or, you know, I'm trying to do this, or I'd like some help on that. And generally, people are quite kind of, you know, forthcoming with their support for other people's projects. And that's the kind of thing that I like about the gaming, the retro gaming community, certainly in the UK. I mean, I'm sure it's like that worldwide anyway. But it's nice, and it's good to hear that you've both been doing well with your projects. Yeah.
How about you, Tom? What have you been up to?
Not a great deal, other than just kind of sitting here and looking at the Dreamcast Junkyard and thinking about what else I can write, possibly, about things that are coming up, or, you know, games that have maybe slipped under the radar for people. There was one thing that I wrote recently, which was a deep dive on the... I'm loath to actually talk about this, but it was the...
I know what you're going to say. Go on.
It's the This is a Dreamcast disc.
Yes, I saw that.
This is my
quite
new
a pull.
Yeah, this is my new project that I'm working on. I need to find who this woman is. I've got a couple of leads. I've already written a part one. If you're listening to this and you don't know what I'm talking about, if you go to the Dreamcast Junkyard main site, you'll find an article about the This is a Dreamcast disc woman that actually is at the top of our podcast. As soon as you press play, the woman who'd recorded the warning on PAL Dreamcast games. Who is she? What's her story? I want to know. I demand to know. I want her on this podcast eventually.
That would be amazing, my friend.
That would be something.
I mean, when you say deep dive, I mean, it was deep.
Yeah.
That's what amazed me. Yeah.
It does go deeper. There is a part two coming, and there are some pretty weird avenues that I travel down, but we'll get to that when it comes.
Well, look,
when it comes to the
point, you know, Tom.
Did you ever see that YouTuber that went out of his way to hunt down the announcer for Super Monkey Ball?
No.
I need to. Found him in the end. It was incredible. It's like an hour long sort of documentary. I forget the channel's name, but if you just look up Super Monkey Ball announcer, I'm sure it'll come up. But it's an incredible journey. He actually travelled to Japan, was contacting all different like voice agencies and all sorts. That was the best bit, is he eventually got there and actually got into a Skype call with the with the person and actually had a little interview with him. It was amazing.
Hopefully I can live up to that kind of...
Tom, I was going to say, you know, if there's someone who's going to, you know, track her down, then it's the guy who found the Dreamcast barber. So
yes. At least you had a face in that case.
Well, yeah, I had a face and like some actual physical, tangible kind of video footage of the guy. This is just a voice, so it's proven a little bit difficult. I'm going off memories and people's recounted tales of working at Sega Europe back in those days.
But, just hope for your sake, it's not a computer-generated voice.
Yeah, I did think maybe. What if it, you know, what if it is a Vocaloid? But I'm thinking, back in those days, a Vocaloid, would they have done that?
Good point. It might have not been really. You would have probably noticed it really obviously.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, it's good to hear from you. I'm sure people listening who've listened to episode zero and travelled with us on this journey to episode 75 will also be very very happy and reassured that you're both still alive and kicking and very much doing your thing. What I wanted to talk about, first of all, though, is just our memories of that very first episode, episode zero. We've all listened to it in the recent past, and I think one of the things that kind of struck me was just kind of how, I don't know if this is going to sound weird, but it sounds very kind of amateurish and very kind of just a trio of blokes having a chat. And that's kind of what this feels like right now, to be honest. So we've not really come very far. But
it need to be more than that?
Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, Aaron, what were your thoughts listening back to it?
I'm trying to think what to even...
Well, we spoke about one of the things that kind of leaped out to me was that we were speaking about Rise of the Tomb Raider, because Rob had been playing Tomb Raider. It's not out yet. And it's like, wow, this is like a snapshot of time 5 years ago, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was, Rise of the Tomb Raider was going to come out, and that had sort of spurred me on to play the two Dreamcast Tomb Raiders. I mean, I don't know, Tom. Like, I think I'm kind of with Aaron. Like, the vast majority of podcasts I listen to, you know, there's very few that come across with, you know, where it's like, oh, you're obviously like a professional and it's all very slick and whatnot. Many of the ones that I like are just like a bunch of friends or a bunch of people who are passionate about something or other, you know, football, motorbikes, video games, doesn't matter. Just sort of getting around the fire, so to speak, and having a sort of a chat. And listening back to it, I did think it actually did have a bit of a, you know, a timeless value in the sense that, yeah, I don't think anything has changed.
It's a good point. We do meander quite a bit, and we do talk about 2D fighters. We talk about what we've been playing, and I love the bit at the end where we talk a lot about Mike Phelan's kind of guide and what that's going to become. Yeah. And then obviously before, you know, when we recorded that podcast, all the stuff with Sega Europe and the cease and desists, all that kind of stuff had not actually happened yet. So it was quite listening back to, you know, the time before all that had actually happened. So,
good old day.
And it's interesting, just from my point of view, I something else that was mentioned was the fact that I've been playing Key to E. It made me laugh, actually. For those who don't know what Key to E is, it's like a Japanese sort of like a romance dating sim. And it made me laugh because...
One of many on the Dreamcast.
One of many. Like, if you like that stuff, then, you know, there's so much there for you on the Dreamcast. But it made me laugh because one of the things I'm sort of messing around with now is on Saturn is... Because I've said I've gone back into this Neon Genesis Evangelion sort of phase. I've been tinkering around with Neon Genesis Evangelion Girlfriend of Steel, which is...
It's not sort of like non-canon story, isn't it? Where they added another character, isn't it?
That's correct. That's absolutely it. And this isn't a dating sim, so to speak. It's
more laughing at the name, you know what I mean? The name Girlfriend of Steel, you know.
Well, it's a pretty good title.
It's a pretty good title, to be fair. You know, like
I really doubt the game lives up to that title in any shape or form.
No,
it could never top that title.
No, it doesn't. You're probably right, actually. The title is probably the highlight, but No, I mean, that's unfair. Like, the game, it is just essentially a visual novel, and it's all non-canon stuff. But if you really like Evangelion, it's just sort of more of that. And, you know, like, the thing I enjoy most about it is it's sort of really, really stately, and it takes some time. You know, like, you can just sort of pot around Nerve headquarters, you know, having a chin wag and just, you know, exploring and having a look at the Evas and stuff. And but obviously, the fundamental part of that game, or one of the core parts, is that this new girl appears, and you know, there is a sort of a mild dating aspect to it. So things don't change, is what I'm trying to say. Well, certainly not for me.
Guys, even though we're coming back and we're having a bit of a reminisce from the early days of the Dream Pod, there is some news to discuss. Two news stories, in fact.
It always stuns me how much is still going on in the Dreamcast scene.
It's incredible. Like,
all these years later, it's insane.
It just keeps coming.
People are going to stop making games for it now. Nope. It just keeps happening.
One of the words in my mind when we first started doing this podcast, I mean, you guys have been doing, you know, the junkyard, you know, for like a decade before the podcast started. But even
even specifically pointed that out in that episode zero. We were like, oh, we've been, you know, doing this thing
for
years, and this is the first time we've done a podcast.
Let's be very clear, like, you know, don't mistake the two. Like, the podcast started 5 years ago, but Tom and Aaron, they, you know, they'd been doing it for a good 10 years, the actual junkyard before then. And but for me at the time, when we started the podcast, the word in my mind that kept coming back to me was renaissance, because it felt like the Dreamcast was having this renaissance. But back then, if you were to ask me,
yeah, it definitely was around that time. Yeah,
it was around that time. But would I say that new stuff would still be happening now, 5 years down the road? Absolutely not. I thought it would be a year or two that you'd get the hype. Everyone would be like, remember Sonic? Remember the Dreamcast? And then a couple of years later, interest would die down, and all these, you know, projects would die, and people would lose interest. But no, here we are. Yeah, so anyway, let's get on to the new news.
Yeah. So the first piece of news that I've dug out from the actual junkyard itself is that the long-lost Dreamcast port of Heroes of Might and Magic 3 has finally been released online. So you can go find the link, download it, burn it onto a disc, and actually play it on your Dreamcast. Now, what's interesting about this game is that it was actually considered one of the greatest lost Dreamcast games. It was teased in magazines. It was one of those PC ports that we thought was going to come.
Actually remember anything about this even being announced. Like, I guess because it wasn't my kind of game, but I just don't remember ever seeing it. I remember people talking about, like, Commando 2?
Oh, yeah, Commandos, yeah.
Black and White was obviously one of the most famous ones that got canceled.
Oh, yes.
But I just, when it came up that this game was, like, found and was about to get released, I was really surprised.
The interesting thing is that this game was in development, and then what happened was, when the Dreamcast was cancelled, the game disc went kind of into a private collector's collection, and then it was actually bought by a couple of different subsequent collectors, and then was just kind of kept privately. That's the story as far as I know. It was only recently that the guy who actually owns it, is a guy called Fatalist DC. He's a Dreamcast collector. Decided to release it. He organised a fundraiser.
Yeah, I saw about the fundraiser. Yeah.
When the fundraiser was met, decided to dump it online, and that's what he's done. One of the things that was quite interesting about this story is that a lot of people assumed that the game was actually cancelled for the Dreamcast because of the whole Sega pulling the plug. But there was an interesting forum thread on the DC Talk forum about this game when all this came to light recently, and one of the best quotes was somebody who had actually quoted one of the developers he'd been talking to, and this is what he says. Heroes of Might and Magic 3 was not cancelled because the Dreamcast was discontinued or anything, but because it failed due to technical limitations. The game was technically too big for the Dreamcast, and since 3DO and thus Ubisoft wanted to see it published as a one-to-one conversion on the Dreamcast, eventually a point was reached at which the Dreamcast was basically just technically overwhelmed. And yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the guys who are on the Junkyard staff, as it were, who've managed to download it, burn it, and play it on an actual Dreamcast, there are a lot of places in the game where the game just crashes. I know it's a beta, so that's going to happen anyway. But
of course, yeah.
By all reports, the game was just too much for the Dreamcast to handle.
I find that really interesting. I mean, I haven't tried this the beta version on the Dreamcast, but I played a lot of Heroes 3 on PC back in the day. And, you know, if you were to just tell me off the bat and go, do you think Heroes 3 would run on the Dreamcast? I go, of course. Hmm. I mean, it's isometric maps and then isometric battle maps with loads of 2D sprites. And it's all turn-based, and there's not really, you know, I mean, I think of like special effects and stuff, and I go, like, there's nothing 3D here, like, but maybe it's just, I don't know, the amount of textures, the amount of assets. I mean, I'm not an expert, so I don't know, but it's interesting you say that. I mean, is it, you know, the one-to-one conversion, is it literally there wasn't enough space on the disc?
I think it might be stuff that's like running under the hood on the Dreamcast that maybe we as like laymen don't really kind of appreciate. So stuff about...
Yeah, it's probably the more technical programming side. Sort of maybe there was a lot of noughts and ones to sort out.
Well, yeah, things like artificial intelligence, the size of the maps, you know, the size
AI
of the actual game.
AI would probably be the biggest crippling point, yeah.
Imagine. But it's that quote from that developer that says that it was the Dreamcast being overwhelmed that is to me is the most interesting part of this. And with that in mind, it says a lot about other games that were potentially coming to the Dreamcast, which were also cancelled. Yeah. And potentially that could have been a reason, because we know the Dreamcast is a very technically capable system when it comes to kind of things like arcade games and, you know, ports of other smaller games. But I think maybe this is one of the things that a lot of people don't take into consideration, that the system wasn't really geared.
Exactly, yeah.
It didn't have a hard drive. I mean, it wasn't designed to run big PC games, you know.
I mean, yeah, I think you've probably hit the nail on the head there. Yeah, like, it doesn't seem like Heroes 3 to me, like, again, like, it screams to me of like a game for like PCs and Macs. It doesn't say I'm a console game. But I don't know, you know, like there was all that window,
did it,
you know.
Did it get any other console ports, or was that the only attempt?
I don't think
so. Does anyone know if there was like a Xbox version or anything like that?
Well, this is what I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't know if there were any other console ports. What I was going to say was, when I first heard of this story, I was like, maybe they thought the Dreamcast could be the vehicle to do this, because there was obviously all the Windows CE stuff tied in.
Exactly, yeah. So they probably thought it would be an easy job, and then they found it wasn't.
You got your keyboard, you got your mouse, you know what I mean? Let's get you know, get a bit of Heroes of Might and Magic going. I can see why
a lot of crossover with like PC gaming, especially early on with the Dreamcast, because of the fact that it had a keyboard and a mouse and it had online and all that kind of stuff. So stuff like Quake 3 Arena just made perfect sense on it.
Yeah, it is a very interesting topic, and I'm pretty sure if you wanted to dig even deeper, you could, as to why this game just could not be run successfully on such a powerful piece of hardware. But
They would have tried to make it work on multiple discs, but then you'd be like in the middle of a battle and it would go insert disc 3 and stuff like that.
Yeah, insert disc 19.
Hey, I used to love those old days, specifically with RPGs, you know, like it's like I'll just play Baldur's Gate 2, I'll just get out my six CDs to be able to, or before that, you know, I've got a couple of old floppy games, floppy disk games, and it's like, here's your 24 floppies, sir.
I had Street Fighter 2 on the Amiga and it was 8 discs.
Oh,
every single fight you had to put a random disc in. So it's like you pick Ryu and then you go against Blanka and it's like insert disc 3, and then a couple minutes later insert disc 7, and it's like,
oh my god.
And it wasn't even a good version of Street Fighter 2, it was awful.
I've just looked up now, and Heroes 3, that the almighty internet tells me, was not ported to any console, Windows, Macintosh and Linux.
So Heroes of Might and Magic 3 has been released by Faceless DC, and also with a lot of input from a guy called Jan Baumgartner, who is the guy who created the CF-enabled Dreamcast, the one that has the GD-ROM drive and also the CF card reader on the side, which we reviewed quite a while back now on the Dreamcast. He's very active in the Dreamcast scene, and you know, props go to him as well. Okay. Let's move on to our next topic of discussion. And this is, as we said earlier, it's quite unusual and weird that a system that's 20 years past its sell-by date, as it were, is still having new games released for it. This next game, which is planned to be released this year, 2020, is a game called Summoning Signals. And this looks like it's going to be a point-and-click game with a very unique visual style. And now, this visual style is known as photogrammetry. So the story of the game is that you are a pilot of a spaceship that has crashed on this alien planet. You need to find all the parts of your spaceship and, you know, recombine them and then get off of the planet. It's a story as old as time itself. But what this game does differently is that it takes this photogrammetry technique and applies it to the Dreamcast for the first time. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, what the hell are you talking about? What the F is photogrammetry? Basically, if you go on Google Maps and you zoom right into like any major city and then click on the 3D button, what Google Maps does is it creates a 3D render of that city using the algorithms of like heights of buildings and shadows and turns it into a fully sort of rotatable 3D image. That's the technology that they're using in this game. So they've got actual real-world assets. They've digitized them. And, you know, they've used this technology to create 3D models and renders of actual things for the game.
They even did my house, like my original house. What, like I went to my address and it was actually in 3D.
What, in the game or in Google?
In Google.
That's what I say.
I was like...
Have they put your house in the game?
They put my... like back garden and everything. It's really bizarre.
So yeah, I don't know if you guys have seen the article about this game. It looks quite interesting. It's still quite early yet. I mean, I think we're maybe
the
6 months away.
The definitely unique.
Yeah, but it's just cool that the studio that's behind this is called 12DB Soft, and it's been published by Retro Surge Studios. The continual release of new Dreamcast games isn't stopping anytime soon, and this is just another one to add to the release list. Really, quite fascinating stuff. Really, especially in the year 2020, we're still having new Dreamcast games that are pushing boundaries of the Dreamcast's actual technical abilities.
19 years after the console was discontinued.
Yeah, and don't you find it strange that it's no longer just like 2D shmups? It's now things using.
We're actually getting all sorts of experimental things now. Starting to get more ambitious with like some of the concepts now, and with like the visual techniques in this case.
I think this is it looks absolutely amazing. As you say, it is early doors, but I think it's that combination of the fact that people are experimenting not just with the type of game that's being created, and this is not just a standard sort of genre, but also that they're experimenting as well in terms of the actual like graphical technology that the games are delivering as well. I think it's absolutely amazing.
Because early on with like all the homebrew Dreamcast stuff and like the indie releases, it was very much sprite-based shoot-em-ups, all that kind of stuff, because it was stuff that they knew would work. You know, you can easily port a Neo Geo game to the Dreamcast, well, mostly easily. You can do sprite-based stuff pretty simply on the Dreamcast. But now it feels like people are actually trying to go think outside the box and try something that the Dreamcast has never done before, and it's quite exciting.
Yeah, it's almost like reverse engineering, you know, these new graphical techniques into the Dreamcast. I just hope that the Dreamcasts that are out there in the world can kind of still be operating as these techniques kind of mature and develop over time. Because who knows, in another 10 years' time, we might be seeing things even more ridiculously impressive.
Yeah, but as long as there's still Dreamcasts around that work anymore.
Exactly, that's the point I'm trying to make, yeah.
They are starting to die. They are definitely starting to show their age.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. And this game comes from a studio that recently released a demo of the Reappear Recycle, and they've released a playable demo, which, again, is another point-and-click game using 3D assets and sprites.
Is that on Dreamcast as well?
Yeah. It was downloadable for free.
So
it shows that they've got the nous to do this. With
they've got the proven track record that they have released stuff before.
Exactly. Yeah. Even if it was only a demo, but I'm quite intrigued and excited to see where this one goes. To be honest,
it's always nice to at the very least have a demo, because at least then they can prove that they have got the programming chops to actually put something out, which in a few Dreamcast projects cases has not been the case.
Sorry, last thing I'll just say on that with the point and click thing, you know, like it just reminded me of like, you know, Broken Sword, and again, like the Dreamcast, you know, the Dreamcast could have had more point and clicks. I mean, that's a genre that obviously for obvious reasons is not as popular as it was 20 years ago, or, you know, even further back. You know, we're talking, I don't know what would be the height, mid to late 90s, something like
that. Monkey Island era.
With the LucasArts, you're right, Monkey Island. And I mean, like, I don't know, what would you say, like Myst sort of kickstarted it all? And then And then, yeah, you had all those cracking LucasArts games like the Monkey Island, Grim Fandango, that sort of stuff.
Did LucasArts do was it Beneath a Steel Sky? Was that LucasArts?
Beneath a Steel Sky is very early. I don't know. My feeling is the Dreamcast could definitely have had more point and clicks. So it's nice to see.
How many did it have? Because I remember there were Stupid Invaders.
Yeah, Stupid Invaders. That was quite a good one, though, wasn't it? Stupid Invaders. It's a weird game, that.
Yeah, it's quite amusing.
Okay, guys, let's move on to the next topic. In case anyone's wondering what we're talking about, you can have a quick look on the Dreamcast Junkyard. There is a game coming out called Summoning Signals from Retro Surge Games. We've done a write-up on that. Check it out. And, let us know what you think. Moving rapidly on, guys... Don't know if you saw this, but we put out a pretty good April Fool this year. It was the
high quality JPEG, that was.
For those people who don't know what we're talking about, we put out an article about a long lost supposed Dreamcast printer that had been rediscovered. And this comes from the mind of James, one of the other co-hosts. Yeah, he knocked up quite a dodgy looking Polaroid-esque image, complete with a timestamp of the 1st of April 1998, I believe it was. And was it 98 or 99? Quite a few people fell for it on Twitter.
Seriously?
Yeah. Quite a few people messaged saying, oh.
They didn't look at their Dreamcast logo and go, that's not skewed right.
Or the end of the controller wire, which is quite clearly just like Photoshopped on.
It's incredibly Photoshopped.
I just wondered if you guys had seen any other good April Fools over the last week.
I saw a particularly cruel one, but there was actually a reason for it. And the developers of Monster Boy, you know, that revival of the Wonder Boy series.
Yeah.
They put out an April, well, it was essentially an April Fools, where it was like they were showing off screenshots of like a DuckTales / Quackshot remake in the style of like the modern DuckTales cartoon. And it looked incredible. And obviously, April 1st, we're like, that's just cruel, guys. Don't do this. That's horrible. Everyone wants it now. And then by the end of the day, they said, the reason we've made these is they were a pitch like at least 6 months ago to Disney. And apparently they rejected it. So they just wanted to show them off.
Wow, that is pretty harsh, to be honest. If, you know, showing something like that, and then people getting excited, and then
Disney doesn't want you to have it, so never mind.
Do you remember a couple of years ago I did the whole kind of dream? It was Dream Stream. It was like
yes.
I thought that was perfect.
The thing was that when I uploaded it, because the blogger, which is what the Dreamcast Junkyard runs on, the blogger like timeline thing was is based in the US. When I uploaded it was April the 1st here, but it was still the 31st of March there. So when I uploaded, the date on the article was the 31st of March, so it looked like it might have been a real thing. And so that's where a lot of the ire came from. People were like,
you were too early.
Yeah, you're too early. No, it was the 1st of March, even in the UK. I'm sorry, you know.
Worst ones are where you get like all the April Fools from Japan, because they get them really early.
I was trying to think of some other ones that I'd seen, but I'm guessing there wasn't really much of an appetite for them this year because of everything that's going on in the wider world.
That's it, yeah.
Platinum Games did a pretty good one.
What was that?
Because they've been doing this thing where they've been teasing like four new projects. One of them was the Wonderful 101 Kickstarter. And they were like, oh, here's our third project. It's a revival of Mooncrester, as in the old shmup, like really old shmup by...
Right.
Is it Ichibitsu or whatever the developer was called? It was really bizarre because the trailer was really slick.
And it's completely fake.
Yeah.
Wow, again,
nonsense, but it was just like this really posh trailer. It was like Platinum Games reviving this random old scrolling shooter from the 80s that no one cares about. And then they were just like plugging the fact that you can get like the original Mooncrester as like a hamster arcade archives. And that was, it's not even like their IP, it's like an IP by some old retro developer that doesn't even exist anymore.
Some of them cross the line between being a bit of fun and actually being, like, as you said earlier, Aaron, being quite cruel. I want this thing that you've just teased, but it's actually not real.
In the case of Platinum's game one, it was like, oh, we're reviving this thing that no one cares about, so it's like not the same. Yeah, it's obviously fake. And I think that joke probably played better in Japan as well, because I don't think it's, I mean, even in Japan it's probably pretty obscure, but over here it's super obscure, you know.
Everyone kind of looking at each other going, what?
Yeah, it's like, what is it?
No, I was just going to say, you know, you mentioned about like people actually wanting things. I think that's very much where the balance, like judging a good April Fool's lies, is if you can basically balance on the line there, because that's why I thought the Dream Stream you did all those years back was so good, because I think a lot of people love the idea, and certainly back then, you know, absolutely would love the idea of being able to play all of the Dreamcast classics on the Switch. And we've seen over the past couple of years, like, just look how much Neo Geo content has been dumped onto that system. And it's to, like, the Switch, even if it's not, you know, hacked and running some custom firmware, even if it's just completely legit, is like port heaven, essentially, you know, for a lot of retro titles,
especially retro stuff. Yeah,
I thought I'd put enough kind of red herrings in there and clues that it was actually fake by, you know,
the fact that
you had to stream Dreamcast games. I mean, why not just release them as actual games, you know, that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, totally. It did play with like all the rumours that were going around about Microsoft collaborating with Nintendo over streaming like Xbox games on the Switch as well. So it felt like a natural continuation of that sort of like rumour mill that was going on.
To be honest, listen, if anyone got past this sentence that I'm about to read, which was from the original story, and still thought it was real, then shame on them. Quote, "The service, tentatively titled Dream Stream, will allow Switch owners to connect to a cyber razor-powered surface that will initially offer a handful of HD remasters of, quote, popular Dreamcast titles like Jet Set Radio, Sonic Adventure, and Spirits of Speed 1937.
I like the cyber razor cut bit, because that probably went over everyone's head that's not British.
And nobody even mentioned the fact that Spirit of Speed 1937 was mentioned in that.
Exactly, yeah. Of all things, that should be the most obvious.
Anyway, guys.
Yeah, but it wasn't April 1st on the blog post, so, you know, it must be real.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Oh, right, dear. Guys. I think we're coming to the end now. What we want to do at the end of this actual episode is bring in a load of quotes and nice messages from people from the community and presenters, guests, past and present from the Dream Pod, just to give us a virtual backpack for continuing with this thing for 5 years. So what you'll hear after we go away is a load of messages from those people, but. We're the important ones. So, guys, where can people find you on the internet at large? Rob, where can people find you if they want to chat to you?
Okay, I'm on Twitter. That's the best place to get me. And that's at R Nicholas J. That's at R Nicholas J, all one word, lowercase. You can also find my content at t3.com. Write a lot about technology and games. Oh yes, and also you can find me at www.superredgreenblue.com.
Nice plug, Rob. Still got it. Aaron, what about you? Where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at animatedaf, and also on Lucky Hit Series for my gaming related stuff.
Excellent. And on YouTube, where can we find you on YouTube?
So YouTube is also Lucky Hit Series.
Fantastic. You can find me here at the Dreamcast Junkyard and nowhere else, because I am a ghost in the system. it's been very nice and very kind of cathartic chatting to you guys again. It's been really cool to get back together as the OG Dreamcast Junkyard
Dream Pod team. Let me know when you're doing some more of these, and I'll see if I can pop on by.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I just want to say thanks as well, obviously, to the previous guys who have also been presenters on the podcast, are Caleb, Xander, Ross, Gaz, Scott, and obviously the current team, which is made up of various people. I'm sure I'm going to forget somebody, but people like Martin, James,
Kev,
Andrew, Mike, Lewis, and Mark, obviously, as well. It's a big family. It's been cool, and it's been a very interesting journey coming from episode 0 to episode 75 and the 5 years in between. But thank you as well to you.
Totally.
The listener, for listening and for reading our garbage and being just a part of the whole Dreamcast Junkyard community. Thank you very much. So what follows now is some messages from our supporters. Thank you very much. All right, guys. I guess it's just a case of saying goodbye now. So goodbye.
See you soon. Bye.
Hello, this is Caleb. Congratulations on 5 years. I'm still involved with the Dreamcast because I am still running my community retro video game days at the public library, and let me tell you, the Dreamcast is always the most popular system.
Hi everyone, this is Luke Bentz, the creator of the DreamPie Project. I just want to congratulate Tom and the rest of the DreamPod team on producing 5 years of outstanding entertainment for us Dreamcast fans. Long may it continue.
PC Wizard 13 here, congratulating the Dreamcast Junkyard DreamPod on 5 years of Dreamcast podcasting goodness. I can honestly say that out of all of the Dreamcast dedicated podcasts out there, the DreamPod is without a doubt my favorite. These guys really know their stuff. With the exception of maybe one or two little things that I need to correct them on after every episode. But in all seriousness, congratulations on 5 years, guys. I look forward to many more episodes of Dreamcast-themed audio being directly injected into my earholes.
Hello, it's Andrew. Just wanting to wish the DreamPod a happy 5th anniversary, and also the Dreamcast Junkyard as a whole a happy 15th anniversary, which is absolutely amazing. The Dreamcast Junkyard is an amazing achievement, full of fantastic articles. Obviously, we've got 75 episodes of DreamPod, technically 76 if you include episode zero, and there's just so much content for Dreamcast enthusiasts, for people who just love Sega and that particular time that they were around. So yeah, thank you, Tom. Thank you, everybody else who's contributed over the years. It's a fantastic achievement. And here's to many more years and many more episodes of the DreamPod.
Hey, it's Adam Korlick. I was a guest on the Dreamcast Junkyard podcast multiple times. Actually, I think 3 times. The first time I did it was back in May of 2015. And I was kind of listening to it a little bit before recording this. And I thought, like, you know, what is there anything I said that was kind of weird that, you know, and one thing that we did talk about was we made a joke about, you know, Shenmue 3, like never coming out, you know, or whatever. And it was like, we recorded that in May of 2015, like late May of 2015. And it was announced only like 2 weeks later at E3. So we were off, but in a good way. No, it was a fun show to have been on. And I got to later be on a couple more times with Corey Marshall himself, who's the guy who voiced Ryo Hazuki in Shenmue 3 and, you know, Shenmue 1 and 2. And so the Dreamcast Junkyard inspired me because they basically allowed me to meet and talk to a guy who represented, you know, my favorite video game franchise of all time. And it was one of those things that was kind of intimidating, but not that much. And then a relationship grew from that, you know, where I would see Corey regularly. I would talk to him regularly. Now we're friends. Like, you know, he and I text each other all the time about just stuff. And so it's the Dreamcast Junkyard was basically the genesis of it. Hey. Okay. You can't say the Mega Drive of it. That doesn't make any sense. But anyway, so they introduced me to Corey, and that was an awesome thing. In a very serious way, it changed the trajectory of my life because it started opening other doors that I eventually went down. I hope the Dreamcast Junkyard podcast has inspired other people in other facets of life to, you know, just somehow improve and do better. And it's not just a piece of entertainment, you know, like I'm, you know, I can only speak for myself as a test case, but it has had real world positive results. You know, I mean, because of the Dreamcast Junkyard podcast, I also got to meet up with Tom. It's good to hear from you, by the way. But because of him, I got to meet up with him in the UK and be a guest at a convention and everything. So it's and that's just because of their podcast. Like, it's not fair. They should be seeing more stuff out of that. These are awesome guys. And I met a couple of them over time. One of them I got to meet in a store in the UK in Cardiff years before we even did a podcast. It was just like a random coincidence. I ran into this guy who had watched my channel. And he actually bought something for the Dreamcast that I was considering buying. And years later, we found out it's like, oh, he's on the Dreamcast Junkyard podcast. Like, of course. So it's congratulations, you guys, on making it 5 years. That's just awesome. Most people don't, you know, most things like that, most pieces of entertainment don't make it 5 years. So it's all downhill from here. Trust me, I've been around way too long. I know how that goes. But in all seriousness, though, congratulations on your success. Keep on going. And I hope to do episode 4. Like I said, I did episode 3 at some point with Max, a Dreamcast guy. It was cool to have us together. I've met him, too. He's an awesome guy. So, yeah, well, let's do some other big collaboration. Let's make another one. Let's make it happen. Thank you, guys. Congratulations.
This is Kev. Hello, this is actually the first episode I've been on in 2020. I was just listening to a few of the episodes that I used to be on to see what my kind of style was for how I would introduce stuff. And it turns out the way I'd introduce stuff would be by frequently not even saying my own name. So I've actually got it in there nice and early. I started as a fan of the Dreamcast Junkyard, Dream Pod, big fan of all the guys who are on, looking forward to hearing the original cast back. I then transitioned into being a guest on the very first episode I was on. If you've listened to that or you've been back through the catalogue recently, you'll notice there's a kind of 5 to 8 minute period where I don't say anything because I kind of forgot that I was part of the show and I was just sat there thinking, do you know what, this is a really good episode, until Mike was like, what do you think about that, Kev? And I was like, oh crap, I'm on this episode. And then I transitioned into what was a kind of makeshift host during Tom's hiatus. We did very few episodes during that stage, but we got to the stage where it was clear that no one else was willing to host. So I kind of stepped in, hoping that that other people would come in and rally around, kind of like an interim manager almost in sports. Thank you to all of our listeners and everyone who listens and makes the show and the community so great, particularly the people who post on the blog. And I just want to say, here's to another 5 years, hopefully.
Hey, Barry from SegaBits here, wishing the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod podcast a happy 5-year anniversary. I know how much work goes into creating a podcast and how typically after about 5 episodes, people will call it quits. But you guys kept it up for not only 5 episodes, but for 5 years. It's insane, but I'm handling it as best I can. So again, congratulations on hitting the milestone, and I'm looking forward to, I guess, the next 5 years, 10, 50, 100, I don't know. How many years do you guys have left in you? I'd like to see a couple of 80-year-old guys sitting around in the distant future talking about the Dreamcast and how we're getting another version of Ducks and how we're still waiting on Elysian Shadows. So again, congrats. Bye.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, Lewis Clark, aka Sonic Yoda from SegaRhythm.com here to say a heartfelt congratulations to the Dreamcast Junkyard podcast for making it to 5 years old. I was very privileged to appear on it a few years back for the Racing Games episode, and I feel very lucky to call some of the DCJY team good friends. Here's to many more years of Dreamcast activity, and obviously the continued success of such a fantastic Sega podcast. Cheers, guys!
This is Lewis reporting in to wish Tom and the Dream Pod and all those who have ever taken part a massive congratulations on 5 years of Dream Pod podcast ramblings. And I just want to say I'm honoured and I'm grateful to have been able to take part on pretty much most of the recent episodes in the last year or so, and I've even hosted some, which is absolutely mad. Anyways, it's always an absolute privilege to talk about Dreamcast with everyone who ever attends these Dream Pods. Here's to many more Dream Pods. Congrats.
Hello, this is former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura calling in. Congratulations on 5 years of the podcast. Some of you might be wondering why I haven't been on the podcast in a number of years. And let me tell you, if you assume it has something to do with 5G, then my friend, you are dead on correct. And let me tell you, when I'm dealing with my new presidential campaign, this is one of the first things I'm going to be investigating as President of the United States. Thank you. And on a personal note, let me just tell you, Tom, the next time I see you in person, I'm going to put you in a headlock, and by God, I'm not letting go.
Hi, this is Mike, the resident pirate talking Bristolian of DreamPod. 5 years of the DreamPod being around sounds bizarre to say. It feels like only yesterday that I was talking to Tom, and he was chatting about wanting to start up a podcast wing of his Dreamcast-centric media empire. Of course, I thought he was insane, which isn't 100% incorrect, to be fair. But was happy that there was going to be a dedicated niche show out there for me to get my Dreamcast fix. Of course, little did I know that half a decade on, and I would, and I think this is right, have the second most appearances as co-host on the podcast. I was even mentioned in Podcast Zero. I did a Dreamcast guide, in case anyone out there doesn't know, available from all good retail. That's a different story. Obviously, my lovely farmyard-tinged accent and copious amounts of trivial Dreamcast knowledge was a big hit with the listening public. Stunned silence. On a more serious note, congratulations to all involved at DreamPod, and it's been a pleasure to chat a bunch of shit with my fine co-hosts over the years. There's been some odd times. We've had dogs barking in the background of a podcast, slowly turning Tom insane. People asking for their tea whilst recording, always a fun one. The sound of a jet engine-powered fan on someone's desk. To be fair, most of these did turn Tom, literally, red with rage, which was always quite amusing. Maybe not what we should have done, but there we go, professional to the last. We even recorded an episode near the docks in Bristol, after spending quite some time looking for a quiet place. We were interrupted by a train, a model train, a miniature train. Not something which 5 years ago I thought I'd be on a podcast now saying I experienced. We had some fine guests on the show over the years, and some great episodes. The Chaos of the Shmup special we did will go down in Dreamcast Junkyard folklore. In fact, the word chaos is something that can be used quite frequently when describing everything we do with the podcast, as shown by a number of different recording options sitting on my desktop as we unceremoniously dumped whichever one annoyed us to the point of rage and found something else. On a final note, DreamPod is something I'm very proud to have been a part of recording. To get a little emotional with everyone, my late father was an avid listener of the podcast for the first 2 years until he passed away and loved listening to it, despite having no clue what was being said, which, to be fair, sometimes we don't either. That will mean that DreamPod is something I always look back fondly at in the years to come. So everyone, take whatever beverage you are enjoying whilst listening to this anniversary episode and raise a toast. And here's to 5 years more.
Hello the team, I'm Philip Nguyen, manager of Josh Prod and co-founder of PixelArt. I'm really happy to celebrate the first anniversary of Dreamcast Junkyard, who loves the Dreamcast, and will prepare some incredible games for this year. All kinds of games, like a racing game, shoot 'em up, and fighting games. Happy birthday, Dreamcast Junkyard.
Hey everyone, it's Martin here, Sega Collection on Twitter, recent DreamPod contributor. Congratulations on 5 years of the DreamPod. I remember 15 years ago or so starting reading the Dreamcast Junkyard, contributing just over 10 years ago, and then recently when I got back into the Dreamcast, hit up the Dreamcast Junkyard posts again and had a look and saw what was going on. Noticed there was this podcast and was very interested, listened to a couple of episodes, and then scrolled all the way back to episode zero, the very first episode, and listened to them sequentially when I was doing my workouts in the gym. And really enjoyed the discussions. It's funny hearing about games being released, and then now, of course, they've been released for years. So it's nice to have this archive of people being excited about future releases and things like that. We still have this going on today with the DreamPod, of course. And it's a nice archive of all of our thoughts and discussions in one place for those times where you just want to sit back, listen, and think about the Dreamcast. So congratulations to 5 years. It's been a real pleasure to be part of this. And here's to the next, 5 years, I suppose. Here's keep up the good work. So, yeah, well done, guys.
This is Paul from Maximum Power Up. I just want to say a massive well done to the Dreamcast Junkyard for now 5 years of doing the podcast. Obviously, it's been the go-to place for all the latest and greatest Dreamcast news and reviews. I've certainly learnt a lot from it, so keep up the great work, guys.
Hi, this is Darren, aka KingMonkey25 on Twitter and Instagram. Congratulations to the Dreamcast Junkyard on 5 years of the DreamPod. An amazing achievement and still my favourite podcast intro.
Hey guys, KC here from Radio Sega and the Sega Lounge Podcast. Just wanted to wish the Dreamcast Junkyard's DreamPod a happy 5th anniversary. Here's to many more to come. Keep dreaming and keep thinking.
Hola a todos. Hello everyone. My name is Carlos Oliveros from RetroSumus in Spain. We have been developing Xenocider for Dreamcast for some time now, I know. And Tom and the rest of the team at the Junkyard have supported us so much over the last few years, so saying thank you felt like the least we could do. Also, personally, I have learned so much by reading what these fine gentlemen produce, so I hope they keep up the good work for many, many years. On an unrelated note, Tom and Mike have been recruited for beta testing Xenocider. How cool is that? Gracias, amigos, and a happy anniversary.
Hi guys, it's Mark from Maz Gaming. Just want to say a huge congratulations to the team behind the Dreamcast Junkyard DreamPod on 5 years of being around. A few years back when I actually first started deciding that I might want to do a YouTube channel, it was largely based on the back of binge listening to 30 or 40 podcasts from the DreamPod at the time, and kind of realised, you know, that it wasn't just me still clinging on to the Dreamcast. It was, you know, there's people out there who share my passion, and it's something that I really wanted to kind of spread with the world. So, you know, it was nice to see and nice to hear at the time. Fast forward all these years later, I'm now lucky enough to be a part of the team making the podcast, and you know, I'm so grateful for Tom and the guys for inviting me in. So, thank you, everyone. Again, massive congratulations on 5 years, and here's to another 5 years of the greatest Dreamcast podcast on the internet.
Please stop this disc now.